Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Viewpoints podcast series here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. While we were off for just a bit over 2 weeks, it seems the world has changed again. Burkhard, it's incredible how we live in such fast-paced times.
You took the words just out of my mind, Dan. And well, thanks for having me again. You know, just as we both took some time off a couple of weeks ago, I was out in the Arctic wilderness on backcountry skis with my son. We were for 4 days pulling out ledges with tents and sleeping bags at around 25 degrees minus Celsius or 13 degrees Fahrenheit, I believe that is. It was magic. It was silence and lights and peace loosely interrupted by the rhythm of our skis. It felt humbling and soothed our souls just before a new storm took markets by surprise. And you know, the Sami, the indigenous people of the Arctic, they have a saying that how you pack your sledge reveals something about your character. To them, as I learned there, the sledge is everything they have. It's the food, it's the sleeping bags and the fishing gear, the most important thing a Sami needs to protect. And you know, that made me think that you could also apply that to your investments, because in my 30 years in business, I feel like I've seen it all, between the totally eclectic portfolios to highly disciplined and diversified ones. And, you know, as you know, how we treat our investment portfolios, our life savings, I believe, also reveals something about our character. You know, today, 3 weeks into the Iran conflict, or is it a little more, I can see how those very disciplined portfolios have weathered this storm, this energy crisis, resolutely well so far. They're down, of course, from their January peak, for sure, but they're much less than you'd think, given what you read, and they're still up on a 6 or 12 month view.
Well, Burkhard, that is good to hear, and I do like your comparison of how an Arctic sledge and an investment portfolio both reveal something about their owners. I guess most investors have been looking for resilience to weather this storm.
Sure, absolutely, and of course, that's something that you should ideally do in good times in order to get most out of it during the stormy times.
That's great guidance, Burkhard. Now, besides the question of how long this might last, investors are, of course, also anxious to get your sense of how cheap markets might become and how high energy prices could surge. Any thoughts on that?
Well, yes and no. No, because there's no crystal ball for this conflict. But yes, I do, of course, have some thoughts just for context. For one, remember George Soros? He was arguably one of the first geopolitical investors, and he famously broke the Bank of England in 1982. And in his autobiography and in as many talks, he always stressed the importance of what he calls reflexivity. Essentially, this reflexivity means that markets do not just mirror geopolitics, what he was looking at, they also shape it. So as markets reach certain levels, like oil prices hitting, say, $120 or $80, that in itself has a direct impact on geopolitical decisions. I'd also put the historical conflict into context. Remember, this conflict is part of a long and complex history, which goes back to 1915 when the borders in the Middle East were drawn. But remember more recently, for example, the so-called tanker wars in 1984. Back then, the Iraqis shot French Exocet rockets at Iranian oil vessels, blocked the Persian Gulf and mined it, and got the Strait of Hormuz with it. So there's absolutely nothing new to today's blockage. And bear in mind who actually swept the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz back then. It was a Navy flotilla of U.S., European, and Soviet mine sweepers well coordinated for the subsequent 2 years, 85, 86. And that's why I had expected the White House to ask other countries like China and Japan to contribute to keeping the Strait of Hormuz open and safe. I think the other historical point of context I'd raise for an aerial conflict like this was NATO's bombing of Serbia in 1999, when Serbia was harsh on the Bosnians, and President Clinton and General Wesley Clark chose, together with NATO, to conduce Serbia to give in. General Wesley Clark explicitly threatened Serbia to bomb it to the Middle Ages back then if it didn't comply with Western demands. And as a result of all that, the pain tolerance of Serbia's regime turned out to be short-lived, and so was the war. I wouldn't be surprised if something similar happens this time around, and the mullah's pain tolerance will also be short-lived, as we can see from some indications of the negotiations we read about. And so, you know, looking at all the historic context suggests to me that this storm too will pass.
Well, that would be indeed something to look forward to, given the impacts felt thus far. And Burkhard, what would that mean for markets, investors, and the economy, that outcome?
Sure. Well, look, I mean, the obvious caveat is that we simply, you know, have no timeline to the conflict. But here's what I would say with some conviction. If the conflict ends within a matter of weeks, which still seems like a base case, realize that everyone involved in this conflict, the U.S., Israel, Iran, and all the neighboring countries, have an essential interest in keeping this as short as possible or feasible, then the impact on markets should really be muted. The U.S. economy remains resilient and formidable. The global economy, the way I look at it, looks still strong. And be assured that this storm is in no way comparable to, let's say, the great financial crisis and recession of 2008, or those two energy price crises in 1973 and 1979. In fact, the energy intensity of today's economy is, of course, as we know, much lower than it was during the previous crisis of 73 and 79 and the other ones. Tech companies nowadays need very little oil or gas. They take much more power from renewables, nuclear, and coal. And, you know, everything seems to happen for a reason. Is Europe and China certainly entered the last energy crisis in 2022, so just 4 years ago, totally unprepared. I think that's certainly not true today. During the last 4 years, remember, China's become a global leader in clean tech, in electrification, and that move to pivot the energy transition is clearly vindicated by today's oil and gas price explosion, while Europe followed and rapidly built infrastructure to import its oil and gas from the U.S. And that diversifies global supply chains and makes the whole of Europe and China much more resilient than it was 4 years ago. And meanwhile, at the beginning of this year, most analysts expected a global gas glut for this year. Of course, that's no longer forthcoming. But good enough, it shows that we were entering from a position of energy abundance, if you will, into a storm that hits us when the economy is much more resilient than it was 4 years ago. And so finally, the corollaries I'd have to a scenario of the conflict ending sooner, not later, expect stocks to still finish the year higher than they started as the economic base case picks up again and productivity lifts many boats. Expect the impact of inflation to be transitory. And so central banks will look through it mostly, and bonds should recover too. Expect the clean energy transition to be a clear beneficiary, a long-term and medium-term one. The AI revolution will certainly not be halted by this. To the contrary, it'll be accelerated. The beach stocks, beach, of course, being the acronym for booking, entertainment, airlines, cruises, and hotels, they took a hard beating, but they'll recover. Tourism is a big, secular trends, not equally for all. Expect industry consolidation and changing trade and transport routes. And one of the unexpected beneficiaries of what's going on with tourism in the Middle East right here in the Gulf right now might even be Africa, the continent I'm going to travel to in the second half of this week.
Well, Burkhard, your positivity and your sense of context are certainly welcome words as markets are continuing to navigate the eye of the storm. So let's keep fingers crossed that it ends soon, and we will stay tuned and do look forward, as always, Burkhard, to our next podcast.
Absolutely. Same here. Thanks for having me. Great to speak to you again after a while, and let's hope that the world takes a positive turn until we speak next time.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.